Assertiveness is the skill that teaches others how to treat us. It lets us set boundaries on what behaviors we consider appropriate, safe, and permissible. It enables us to say no to children and teaches them acceptable ways to say no to others. In this session, you will learn how to use an assertive voice, give assertive commands, and how to effectively handle tattling. Welcome to session 5, The Skill of Assertiveness. Now, here's how we're going to start. We're going to start with a song called Three Nice Mice. And the reason we're starting with this, have you ever just said to yourself, why can't they just be nice? You know, how hard is this? Well, this skill, assertiveness, is an integral part of helping children be nice. So we're going to start with Three Nice Mice. Jenny, if you'd come up and play with me. So it goes like this. We're going to go, three nice mice, three nice mice. See how they care, see how they care. They hold both hands and give a shake. Here comes your joy juice. Smiling good, see that joy juice? Smiling together, good friends they make. Turning around for goodness sakes, three nice mice. So we'll do that twice, the first time to get the rhythm of it, the second time to nail it. All right, everybody up. Here we go.
Three nice mice, three nice mice. See how they care, see how they care. They hold both hands and give a shake. Smiling together, good friends they make.
That's right.
Then turning around for goodness sake.
Yeah.
Three nice mice.
All right now.
Three nice mice.
Cover your eyes. Here we go. Eek! Okay, it's a surprise ending. All right, thank you. Thank you, Jenny. The icon for the skill of assertiveness is a flashlight. In other words, where we focus our attention dictates our values. So we use a flashlight to kind of show that. And the power comes from the power of attention, which says, what you focus on, you get more of. Say that with me. What you focus on, you get more of. So once we can hold that power, if you go back to the very beginning where we had that rope and we held onto that skill, it says, remind yourself, Becky, what you focus on, you get more of. Then you can really nail that skill of assertiveness. And then we can provide that concrete structure that's going to build healthy, successful children. All right. So one of the things I want you to do, just for fun of it, is get one of these. Now, you can get these anywhere. These are a little headlight, okay? And I want you to wear it around for an entire week just to show yourself what you truly focus on. So if I go, why did you hit her? Is hitting nice? Do we hit our friends? Why were you hitting? Tell me. I don't understand. Where's my focus?
Hitting.
Where's my value? Hitting. What do I teach to value?
Hitting.
And I train them to find everybody in the room that's hitting so they can come and say, ah, they're hitting. So wear this thing for 1 week. 1 week, and you'll be surprised at what you learn about yourself. Now, when I say you can use this to look outward, but you've also got to look inward. Where's your inner speech focused? Where is that? Because what you focus on,
you get more of.
There you go. So I'm going to show you two scenes, so you can see the contrast here. So come on up, Jenny and Mindy. Okay, in this particular case, Jenny, one of them is going to push each other. Let's see who's pushing. Whoa, it's Mindy. Good thing I got your back. There you go. All right. So, Mindy, why did you push her? And why did you push her so hard? We're just doing a silly demonstration, but no, you had to push her hard. Push her so hard, she fell into me. Yeah. Why were you pushing?
I wanted her to move.
All right. So, where was my focus? Pushing. Constant pushing. What will I get more of? All right, let's try it again. All right, I'm getting out of the way.
She's late.
Jenny, Mindy just pushed you. Did you like it?
No.
Tell her, I don't like it when you push me.
I don't like it when you push me.
When you want me out of the way, walk around me.
When you want me to move, walk around me.
There you go. There you go. Now, where's my focus? I went to the victim first, the one who got pushed, so you can either go to the aggressor first, which says, I value hitting or I value hurting, or I can go to the victim first and say, I value healing. So I went to the victim saying, I value healing. I value those who get hurt. Also, where was my other focus?
Teaching.
On the skill, walk around. I don't like it, walk around me. I don't like it, walk around me. You wanted her to move and you didn't know what else to do. Walk around her and I'll reinforce it. So where my focus is constantly on what I wanted her to do. And we can make this shift, and this shift is essential if we're going to have, quote, nice children, because nice children know what to do, when to do it, and how to access it when they need it. All right. Thank you, girls. Okay, now, where we place our attention, remember the power of attention, where we place our attention literally alters our brain. Literally alters our brain. Now, many of you might have heard the term neuroplasticity. Now, neuroplasticity is the brain's ability to change its structure and function based on the demands of a situation. In other words, it's always wiring and rewiring itself based on the climate or the soil in which it finds itself. So if you grew up in a lot of stress, your brain is wired very thickly down in the lower centers so that you can constantly be on a defense. So you have a very defensive mind, very reactive mind. Someone just gets close to you, or say you're a child in the classroom, someone just walks this right by them, and they're like, bam, you've seen that. It's like they weren't even near you. Ah, they were too close, they were in my space. You know, so they're so reactive because their brain has been wired to handle extreme stress. Children who grow up in safe environments and connected, theirs is more wired to problem solve and handle other situations and go, oh, I see, you wanted to walk around, just walk around her. So this is important that we understand neuroplasticity. So I'm going to show you a movie, and it's the simplest movie I have found to show you what it actually looks like and how we actually wire our brain based on the family we find ourselves in, based on the school we find ourselves in. And you know everybody has to adapt, right? So our brain couldn't adapt unless we had neuroplasticity. And it used to think that when you're little, your brain has a lot of neuroplasticity. It's changing all the time. But when you get old, you're like, okay, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. But that's not the case. It's constantly doing this. Watch this video. Watch this video.
Thank you.
I hope you took from that, that if a child comes in with a stressed brain, a toxic stress brain, lived in trauma, we can change it. We can change it by the quality of our relationship and how we respond to them, how we guide them, and how we help them with their upset. There is no lost cause. There are no weeds. Okay, so we have the opportunity to mold our own brains consciously. All you have to do is focus on what you are paying attention to and change it. So think again to your own inner speech. Where is that focus? And if you hear yourself going, lant, lant, and just berating yourself, and you think, well, that's not a big deal. Nobody hears me. No one's seeing it. It's not a big deal. It is a big deal. You are wiring your own brain. Change it. That's not a luxury. We don't have the luxury to beat ourselves up anymore. We don't have the luxury to beat other people up. It's wiring our brains so that we are becoming more and more of a reactive, violent culture than we'd ever hoped to be. And there's no tigers chasing us. They're all tigers in our head. What we focus on, we get more of, all right? So if you're focusing on helpful acts around the classroom, what are you going to get more of? If you're focusing on hurtful acts, what are you going to get more of? All right. Watch this in the screen. So, again, this is focusing on what you want the child to do instead of that stop it formula we've been after all along. So look at this. This particular child goes, I did it. I stopped coloring on the walls. Yay for me, right? And now, I did it. I stopped coloring on the baby. Yay for me. I did it. I stopped coloring on the dog. When we focus on what we don't want, we set kids up to be discouraged. And of course, if we're going to play the stop it game, it doesn't generalize. We're going to have to go stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it. And by doing that, we're ultimately said, please help me stop being a bad boy. That's what we're doing. Stop it, stop it says, please, please help me stop being a bad boy. I don't like that. So, how many of you have tried to change your own behavior? Okay, so again, that idea of losing weight or something like this, and let's take losing weight because I've done that a lot. So we're going to take losing the weight. So often when we are trying to do this, we start off maybe like I did, started off focusing on what I wasn't going to eat. Okay, you can't, no, that's Becky, no more sugar, cut out the sugar, you know, and anything white, which I think is wrong, but okay. Which includes bread, potatoes, popcorn, I mean. So I would basically go, okay, I'm going to cut back on my sugar, no more sugar, I'm not going to eat sugar. Now, when I say I'm not going to eat sugar, my brain doesn't hear, I'm not going to eat. It hears sugar. And as soon as my brain hears sugar, my insulin, everything gets prepared for me to hit a vending machine. I mean, it's all psyched up. She's going in. So what happens as my blood sugar adjusts within me, I've just told my brain, I'm not going to have sugar. It starts adjusting my whole biochemistry, preparing for the sugar. Well, the sugar doesn't come. So now I'm getting low blood sugar. So I'm like, you know, dragging around like this. And, you know, because I'm so tired, I just think, oh, my gosh, I need some sugar. But you can eat the sugar or you can get self-righteous. Often we get self-righteous. Then we start going, uh-huh, what are you eating? Then you go to the grocery store, look what they have in their cart. And, you know, so then you get some adrenaline because you're the judge and jury of all life, you know? And it's like, uh-huh, you know how many pounds of sugar the whole world eats in a day or something? We just get all kinds of nutsy. But anyway, we make it generally. If we make it through 1 week, you know what we do? At the end of the week, we go, you know, I've been good all week. Deserve a little treat. You know, so then we get some kind of hot fudge brownie delight just to celebrate. And again, that comes from being raised with rewards and punishment. We eat that hot fudge brownie delight. That's a slippery slope. The next day we think, oh, it's a family picnic. One little pumpkin pie is not going to hurt. And next thing you know, we're punishing ourselves for how we rewarded ourselves. So again, another downfall of the other system. So if you want to lose weight, you really have to focus on what you want. You have to go, I love fruits and vegetables. I adore fruits and vegetables. Hi, I'm Becky, loving fruits and vegetables. I mean, we do it everywhere. I can hardly live, hi, without fruits and vegetables. So, and we keep doing that. So when we go to the grocery store, we don't have to fight the candy aisle like, oh, I'm not even looking. I'm not even going to look. And, you know, and they have it right when you're trying to get out, right? It's like, oh, geez. You know, so you don't have to worry about that because you've been talking, I love fruits and vegetables. You get in the grocery store and you're just drawn to produce. You next thing you know, like, oh, look at me with the green beans. You know, so the point is you can't change behavior without focusing on what you want. You can't do it. I can't change my own behavior. You can't help children change their behavior by focusing on all their flaws. You can't help your significant other change by pointing out in a helpful way how horrible a human you are. And let me identify them for you. Just trying to be helpful in case you remarry. So what we want to do is, how do we help then develop this power of attention in children? How do we help? First of all, we got to focus on what we want for ourselves. Everybody got that? Because what you focus on, you get. And now we're going to help children. We're going to help them develop the power of attention because, as I've mentioned, that attention span is getting a little on the frail side. So what we do is today's children are growing in such a culture clash, because of the media in which they're exposed to. Between the ages of 2 and 11, children see 25,000 advertisements creating the I want that syndrome. And it's sold, you will not be happy without it, just like it's sold to us. I want it, and if I don't get it, the world doesn't go my way. And I don't get that thing, I won't be loved. Boom. Also, children see 4,000 ads for food. 81% of them are about sugary cereal or fast food or soda. 4,000. At the same time, they're seeing the equal number of ads that say the best body in the world is one that's thin and trim. Now, that's impossible to reconcile inside ourselves. And the media tends to focus on violence and aggression and mean-spirited, mean girls. You see the same media I do, right? Okay, so we haven't before in the history of humankind had so much access to somebody else who's directing our attention on values we might not hold in highest esteem. So what does this mean besides limiting their view of media? The second means we have to do our job extra well. We have to step up our game because it's happening out there and we need to help children develop their power of attention. And we do this by noticing again. Every skill has that quality of noticing. So we're going to notice what children do. You walked in and sat down and opened your book. You raised your hand so I knew what you could do. We're constantly doing this noticing. If I said, oh, look, Jenny walked in like this. Her body's down like this. Seems like she had a hard morning. What can we do to help her? We can breathe and wish her well. But if I hadn't noticed that, you would not have focused on that, correct? Jenny would just walked on in like this, all mopey, just kind of like Schubert did when he went, oh, no. So our ability to notice them directs their attention. Where we direct their attention strengthens the images of what to do in their brain, helps them see other people beside themselves, stimulates the prefrontal lobe, and keeps them in a higher state. This is pretty good stuff, isn't it? I mean, that is very good stuff. Okay, I'm going to shift with my noticing from focusing on what I don't want to what I do want. We call that skill pivoting. Okay, so a child starts to climb on the table. Now we can go, get off the table, don't mess with the table, you heard me, get off that table. Or we can say, when you want the salt, hold your hand out and say, pass the salt, please. Now you'd have to imagine, you can see the scene I set, but you didn't know they were climbing on the table to get the salt, did you? But you can see we would focus on, is that safe? Get off the table, sit, bottom on your chair. Okay, if you get off that one more time, you're telling me you're done, I'm gonna take your food, we'll put it in the refrigerator. All right, you're saying you're done, that's it, no more food. Or when you want the salt, say, please pass the salt. A child grabs the remote. Oh, you wanted the remote. When you want the remote, tap your sister, wait for her to look and say, may I have a turn? As opposed to, we don't grab the remote, stop the grabbing. The grabbing is not nice. Do you see how we're shifting again? And it all comes back to the same basic skill of noticing. I can't tell you how powerful it is, especially now. With this media and us, we've got to be, I'm directing your attention. I'm directing your attention. Follow what I focus on. See the baby's face, the baby's saying, I'm hungry. Go help mommy by getting a bottle. And now you know what the child is doing? Learning to read that baby's face. Next thing you know, the baby starts crying and the little other child's going, hey, mommy, I think the baby's hungry. A whole different ballgame. Say a child, and we have this one all the time, you know, the tugging. Here they are. You're just tugging on you all the time. You wanted my attention. When you want my attention, tap me gently, wait for me to look at you, and then I will talk to you. That's simple as opposed to, and here's what we do. Jenny, this is amazing to me. I've got to demonstrate this. Okay, so we're walking down. I see this all the time. Nonverbal to nonverbal. One person's 25 and the other one's 4. So tug on me. And they go down. And that's exactly, you sit, watch them down the mall. They're tugging and the parent is like, and of course they're on the, yes, yes. Stop it! Now go sit down. Okay, watch this video. Now this video, watch how none of the grabbing gets allowed. Watch, and it's not even a grabbing, it's just kind of a taking it out of your hand. Watch how specific this is. She's offering a greeting. The little boy wants his dad to do the greeting, and he just takes the plate out of her hand. He doesn't even grab it, he's just taking it. But at first, she's just letting him take it. See, all these little moments, watch the little moments that we are missing that could be so profound in teaching.
Greet me.
Okay,
so good. You have a choice. You can choose the...
He's going to greet Poppy first. So say, Melanie, wait, so let's do that again. Say, Melanie, can I hold it?
Go
hold it.
You see that?
Oh, can you put your hand like this?
Put your hand out like this. Here you go, Matias.
Tap him on the shoulder. Poppy, wait, get his attention. There you go.
Hey, I'd like to be greeted by a caterpillar.
Caterpillar crawl. Crawl up his arm. Caterpillar crawl. Oh, all the way to his head.
Matthias, how would you like to be greeted?
Oh,
you chose the caterpillar.
Look at caterpillar crawl. Whoa, and a big hug.
All right.
Did you see those little moments? We would have missed those. He didn't grab the plate from the other person. He just took it, and she allowed him to take it without saying, may I have it, please? So many of these moments we could catch, but we have to be present, which means we have to breathe. Now, you might think, oh, I don't know about this noticing stuff. But let me just tell you, especially for all the men watching, this is just good coaching. Noticing is just good coaching. So if I was up here and I was the coach and I was a sports coach and I'm up here and decide which one of these coaches you'd rather have. So here I am, I'm on a baseball team. Ball comes, bam, and I hit a nice double, okay? And I'm bringing a run. When I get back to the dugout, the coach goes, great hit, Becky. Brought in a run, whoa. Okay. Or here's the second coach. I'm up here. Here comes the ball. Bam, double. Same thing happens. I get back into the dugout and the coach goes, oh, Becky, you stood up there. You kept your eye right on that ball. And then when you stepped and you shifted your weight and you cracked that wrist right, perfect timing as you shifted your weight. Pew! And that was a double, which brought in a run. Now, which coach do you want? The one that helps you conscious of what you're doing. The one who helps you paint a picture in your mind of what happened so that you can draw that image out again and maybe replicate that double the next time. Okay, so here are the assertive skills we're going to go through. We're going to talk about your assertive voice. We already talked about pivoting. We're going to talk about assertive commands, and then we're going to learn how to do it with children. So the first thing is to talk about just an assertive voice. Now, an assertive voice is the voice of knowing. It's the voice of no doubt. I don't know, people used to have weeks of training with assertiveness training, and I'm like, what in the world do you do for a whole week? Because I can teach it to you in a second. Because if I said to you, my pants are black, my coat is red, do you hear my tone? Do you hear any doubt that I believe my pants are black and the coat is red? Right? And so when we have a passive voice, it's like, my pants are black? You know, it's like, oh, you don't know if they're black or not? Are you asking me permission? Do you want my opinion about those pants? An aggressive voice is, my pants are black. Disagree with me and you die. So a passive voice has at the end of it is like, is this okay with you? It kind of asks permission. An aggressive voice says at the end, or else you die. We don't know what the or else is. Sit down now. I'm not sure what the or else is, but it's coming. And a passive voice is, sit down, okay? You know, and they're going to eat you alive. Actually, they'll eat you alive with both voices because we need the voice of no doubt. So say this with me. Your pants are black.
Your pants are black.
Your coat is red.
Sit down and look at me.
All right, there you had your assertiveness training. You just have to know it's the voice of no doubt. It's that intent behind it. If I said the lights are on the ceiling, line up behind me, they're the same tone. I'm not approaching the situation in a fearful mode. If you approach the situation in a fearful mode, you're going to be passive or aggressive because you're already defending against them not doing it. I'm scared, see? I wouldn't be scared if I didn't have Jason in my classroom, but I've got Jason this year, so I'm like, okay, instead of saying line up with your hands by your side just like this, check the space behind and in front of you, which is my assertive voice. I approach it like, oh gosh, you know, Jason's not going to do this. So I'm going in, line up, you know, now I'm coming in either going to cream them or I'm coming in, okay, line up, okay, with your hands like this, you know. You're going to come in scared it won't happen, defending against what if. All right? So the first thing you want to do is have your voice of knowing. Then the voice of knowing, an assertive voice, does three things. First, it tells you what to do. So if I said, my pants are black, my coat is red, don't hit your friends, that's not assertive. I've got my voice of knowing, but I'm focused on what I don't want. So you focus on what you do want. You have the voice of knowing, and you're going to paint this beautiful, clear picture of what you want the child to do. Now, why on earth would we paint a picture? Because if you go back to the brain and you remember all that negative energy that came up, remember? And landed in that right hemisphere of the brain. And the right hemisphere of the brain is the center, the seat of self-regulation. And the right hemisphere loves images. That's how it governs you. I want you to take this moment and I want you to think about where you live. So put yourself in your own house. Now I want you to, in your head, imagine driving to your closest grocery store. More than likely, you're pulling up some kind of image. It's not necessarily a picture, but it's an image. The right hemisphere loves images. It learns in images. It needs an image. It governs through images. And that's the side that regulates. So we want to paint a picture. Often, I've done this, and I don't know if you have, but I've been driving down the road thinking I know where I'm going. You know what I mean? I'm like, I got the image, but then my mind starts wandering. I'm off in Cancun. Who knows wherever I've gone? And anyway, all of a sudden I go, oh, I don't know where I am. Have you done that? It's like, oh. And in that moment, you can't find the image. Now, where was that I was going? Oh, I was going to the store. And you're looking around for markers, and you go, and then once you find that marker, that image of how to get from that marker to the grocery store comes back up in your head and go, oh, I know where I am. Imagine being in that state of, oh, I don't know where I am, which means you have no image of what to do in your head and the anxiety that produces. And then think of the children. Think of the children who have been told since they were almost born what they've done wrong, not one image of what to do right, and the anxiety they must live with. So we want to paint a picture. So, three things. One, you tell them what to do. Two, voice of no doubt. Three, paint a clear picture. So it would be like this. It would be like, Jenny, come towards me, pick up the block and put it back over underneath the sign. Carry it like this, there you go, and walk over and place down. There you go, there you go. And you put the safety so they could read it. Very helpful. Right, so I showed Jenny, go ahead, Jenny, have a seat, we'll come back. So, did you see how I painted a picture for her? Did you see me go and pick it up like this, carry it like that? The best commands and assertive commands, you're more like a flight attendant than anything else. Okay, forward, aft, I'm here, the lights will come over here, and you're doing this. And you watch good teachers, man, they are busy. It's like, all right. We're moving this way, headed out. Moving out. Okay, now we're sitting down. Oh, looky there. And you look at the parents too. Okay, we'll put a seatbelt on. Click, click. We're putting a seatbelt on. Click, click. All righty. Now we're going to get out. Let's pick them up. Okay, walk with mommy. Walk. Come on now. You know, it's this constant chatter and the constant noticing and moving forward, aft, and all that. The more you do that, the more you paint that picture, the more successful the child will be. Okay. So watch this. I'm going to do four things, and I want you to tell me which one gives the clearest picture for you. Here's the first one of what to do and be successful. No running. There is no running in this hall. That's one. Two. Walking feet, walking feet, walking feet. Three. What is our rule about running? What is our rule about running? Three. Walk safely in the hall with your hands down by your side, just like this. There you go. Which one painted the clearest picture? Four. And the first one, what'd you get? No running, no running. What'd you get in your head?
Running.
You saw this picture. If I said to you, don't think about a purple dinosaur, what happens? Yeah, and so those images are governing you. So if I say no running, you hear that, you see this like, and you're like, okay. Now, some girls, and girls are much better than this, you can say no running, they see the running, they can transform the picture in their head, flip it to what they're supposed to do, and pull it off. Some girls can. Boys, no way. Walking feet, what do you see? Just some feet walking. Wouldn't it be nice to have the body with it? Now, and the third one, what is our rule about running? What image did you get?
Running.
How about this one? What did I just tell you? What image did you get? Nothing. Anxious, I'm lost in my car, and I can't find any image to help me. And then you get lost in your car with no image to help you, and here comes someone telling you, why are you doing this again? And adding, your clacker's already clacking. And then they come in with a clacker that's going like this, and here you are with your clacker getting more and more out of whack. So now we're going to do assertive command. So Jenny, if you would come over and just kind of diddle in here. Now, assertive command is basically you're going to get the child's attention, and then you're going to use this formula, a name, a verb, and paint a picture. Name, verb, paint. Say that with me. Name, verb, paint. Okay, so now often here's what we do. So I'm over here, whether I'm in the room or in a house, and I'm going, Jenny, come get that block you left over here that's red, says safety. Jenny, come get the block. Jenny! Okay, how many of us holler from a distance? Yeah, so that's not going to work. That's not going to work because we're trying to develop the prefrontal lobes. And let me tell you, the prefrontal lobe development is labor intensive. That means we got to walk over here. And we could walk over and we could just wait until she notices us. She doesn't, so I'm going to touch her. There you are. That's when you say, there you are. There you are. Jenny, go get the red block and we're going to put it on top of the blue block. Then you come back and read your book. Go put the red block on top of the blue block. There you go. Okay, that's good enough. Now, Jenny, put it back on the floor. But you see what I said? Jenny, go. Jenny, put. Jenny, pick. Jenny, walk. I didn't say, Jenny, would you like to? Jenny, could you? It was name, verb, paint. Thank you, Jenny. Don't y'all all want a compliant child like Jenny? So even at the best we do, they're not going to necessarily listen to us. Have you noticed that? Okay, so we're going to learn different skills now of what to do when they don't listen. We're just going to start with one on this. But let's say I say to Jenny, pick up the remote and hand it to Becky. And she just looks at me like, a little defiant, but just maybe testing, not defiance, just testing. Then the next line is, I'm going to show you how to get started. Say that with me.
I'm going to show you how to get started.
And as soon as she moves, you're going to say, that's it, you're doing it. Say that with me.
That's it, you're doing it.
Okay. So let's look at what this looks like. Jenny, if you'd come up. Now, so Jenny's going to pick this up. Now, what's going to really happen is I'm going to say, Jenny, take the remote and hand it to me. And she's going to kind of balk a little bit, you know, like, I don't know. I really kind of wanted to kind of squeeze it and play with it and see what slides I could change. So then I'm going to go like this. I'm going to show you how to get started. Say that with me. And as soon as she has it like that, I'm going to go, oh, look, there you go. You did it. You put it right in my hand. Now, she wasn't going to put it right in my hand. You know, I had to kind of scoop her with my enthusiasm. So it's like, start over and don't touch it yet, okay? Jenny, take the remote and put it in my hand. I'm going to show you how to get started. Yeah, pick it up now. Pick it up. There you go. You're doing it. Good for you. Now, I'm not dragging her with my hand. I'm just kind of gently kind of guiding. It's very gentle. Did I drag you? No, it's a very gentle touch. And what happened was, let's say she picks this up and she's going to attempt to start to click it, but I'm going to scoop it. Watch it one more time. So you're going to pick it up. Instead of giving it to me, you're going to go like that, and I'm going to scoop you at that point. Okay? Jenny, pick up the remote and put it right in my hand. I'm going to show you how to get started. There you go. Look at you. You did it. You did it. Good for you. Good for you. Now walk on back and have a seat. But we can scoop them a little without getting so crazy at first. Now, there's other steps when they get a little more defiant, which we'll get to as we move through the skills. But the first thing you want to do is before you get irate, before you let that button get pushed, before you go off the deep end, you're going to give an assertive command. Then you're going to say, if they start just getting a little distracted, a little balky on you, you're going to say, I'm going to show you how to get started. Say that with me. And no matter what they do, if you're going to kind of, as soon as they start moving, as soon as that body moves, you're going to go, that's it, you're doing it. Say that with me. That's it, you're doing it. There you go. So you're going to practice a lot of scooping. Now, once we learn our assertive voice, then we can teach children theirs. One of the ways that we do that is, again, the Schubert books are very, very helpful. And we call the assertive voice in conscious discipline for children their big voice. So we have Schubert's big voice, and we have, for the little teenier children, but it allows her to learn her big voice. Now, one of the best way to teach children their assertive voice is through tattling. Now, I want to give you some information because most people hate tattling. All right? And if you're a teacher, you hate tattling because you've got 25 in the classroom and 25 tattle on 25. And so your whole day is about, she did this, she's looking at me. So, but I want you to hear this. We're not here to stop tattling. Children 8 and under are genetically programmed to bring their problem to an adult for you to handle us. And I hear kindergarten teachers, first grade teachers, second grade teachers, I hear them all going, I don't know how to stop this tattling. I said, you don't want to. Can you imagine what we're teaching about authority? Imagine that we're outside here. We're outside and we see this big old chemical truck that says toxic waste. And they're emptying their truck into the lake right by your house. And you go, well, that's it, I'm telling. And you go up to the authority people in your community, the police officer, someone, and say, they're dumping toxic waste into the lake behind me. And they say, is this my problem? Are they bleeding or dying? If they're not bleeding or dying yet, don't bring it to me. What is your image of authority? Would that be someone you consider helpful? They say, why don't you just go over to the toxic waste people and use your words? Well, why don't you bring your badge and your gun with me? So we've got to be careful about this. So, and interesting enough, we tell young children it's not nice to tattle. And then when we get up to middle school where bullying becomes a little more rampant, we go, oh, now you need to tattle. But you know, we don't call it tattling then. You know what we did? We changed the word. It's called telling. Now you tell on your friends. When you were little, it was tattling, and I jumped all over you for doing it. But now, would you please do it when you get older? These mixed messages allow us not to trust ourselves and not to trust one another and certainly not to trust authority. So let's do how can we deal with this tattling. So first of all, you want to respond in the first way with, did you like it? Say that with me.
Did you like it?
Okay, so the child comes to you and says, Addison hit me. What are you going to say?
Did you like it?
Person, a child comes up to you and says, didn't touch my backpack.
Did you like it?
Maddie is looking at me. Remember, ours is not to judge. Maria is on my side of the car. Now, that's our first step because we often say there, how did that make you feel? That's our first one. How did that make you feel? And now we got that vest on the wrong side. and we're saying someone else is in charge of your behavior, and the best thing to do is to control her, but you can't control her in front of me, so I would desperately, and I actually encourage you to do that when you're on the playground and I'm not looking. Do you see how we've set them up to do freaky stuff when we're not around? Okay. Now, so here's the, and once we said, did you like it, we're going to give them a sentence. We're not going to say, go use your words, because my worth might be F you. And you say, I did use my words. They're not, you know, now I'm in more trouble. Because that might not, that might be the words they've heard at home from their older brothers and sisters, on television, from the video game. They used their words. They weren't the words you were thinking they would use, but they used them. So you have to give them the sentence so they can carry it and use it exactly. So you're going to have to give them the pronouns in this way. Go tell Jenny, I don't like it when you push me. See, you can't say, go tell Jenny you don't like it, because they'll go, you idiot. You have to give them the sentence to carry, the words to carry with the tone and the intention. That's why we have to have our voice of knowing before we can teach a child a voice of knowing. They can't go up and go, I don't like it when you push me. Or they can't go, I like it when you push me. That's just like putting bullseyes on your back. Passivity invites aggression. Aggression begets aggression. And assertiveness dissipates aggression. So let me just give you what we have to do. We end the sentence then with what we want the child to do. I don't like it when you push me, walk around me. I don't like it when you call my name, use my name, it's Becky. Call me Becky. I don't like it when you hit me. When you want my attention, tap me and wait for me to look. We're going to end this with a social skill lesson. Do y'all see it? We're going to have to coach children to make that flip at the end. We have to coach them. Let me tell you why. There's no way on earth with a group of kids, especially 4 and 5 year olds. 4 and 5 year olds intrude upon each other about 4 times per hour. In other words, they step on each other, they hit each other in the hair. And this is not intentional, but they're doing it all the time. They step on each other, they hit each other, they grab something, they play with someone's hair, they got fingers up each other's nose. I mean, you've been there. You know what it's like. 4 times per hour, you've got 20 of them. That's 80 times per hour they're intruding on each other's space, touching their papers, tugging on their clothes, knocking them out of the way with their elbow, pushing them just to get in line, 80 times per hour. If you have them 6 hours a day, are y'all doing the math? That's 480 of these intrusive acts per day that a child is living through. 480. Can you imagine, you've been in here quite a long time, can you imagine spending your day at your work office and 480 times someone fiddled with your hair, took your pen, took your paper, kicked your shoes, hid them from you, and went in your purse and found all your stuff? I mean, I don't know how long you'd make it at that job. It'd be like, it's stressful. So there's no way I personally can deal with 481 of these. I can't do it. And I can't have children go, I don't like it when you walk around me, stop it. I don't like it when you do this, stop it. I don't like it, because then you have the whole 20 room going, stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it. And nobody learns how to do it. But if I teach the first kids, I don't like it when you push me, walk around me, she or he is now teaching the next child a skill. The next child says, I don't like it when you call me names, call me Becky. Teaches another child a skill. By the end of that 4-year classroom, I've got a bunch of social skills teachers that are going to carry over into kindergarten, that are going to grow up teaching everybody around them a social skill. Now that is gold. That is gold. So we're going to practice this. So this is on the screen, and we're going to practice. So I'm going to be the child. And just so that you have some time to say it out loud, you're going to be the teacher. Justin called me a butthead.
Did you like it?
No.
Tell Justin, I don't like it when you call me names.
Justin, I don't like it when you call me names.
What do you want me to call you?
By my name.
Tell Justin, please call me Cody.
Do you see what we have to do? We have to coach this process. And we can't go, please, I don't like it when you hit me, stop it. It has to go, I don't like it when you hit me. When you want a pencil, say, may I borrow your pencil? Now, that flip at the end, which takes the left hemisphere of the brain, the right hemisphere of the brain, and goes, and the child says, I'm ready to solve this. I'm empowered. My brain is so integrated. My heart and lungs are pumping together. I am so integral and indispensable to life. Watch me jump in the pool. So take one hand like this. Take one hand like this and go by flipping what you don't want to what you do want, integration organizes. And now you've got a child saying, oh man, what can I learn and what can I teach the others? And it's a good thing. It's a good thing. So we'll do one more practice. Okay, you're the teacher again. Ashley wrote on my paper.
Did you like it?
No.
Tell Ashley, I don't like it when you write on my paper.
Ashley, I don't like it when you write on my paper.
What do you want?
Stop it.
So you want her to write on her own paper. Tell Ashley, please write on your own paper.
See, I had to take that stop it and flip it form. I had to take that. Now, these are different words. You know, I always think conscious discipline is a second language. And it's not my first. It's still my second. But I have seen the power in my own grandchildren. I have seen kids in schools all over the world where this is their first language. And that is something to see. And some of you are nodding your head because you've seen kids that you've been teaching that it's their first language. Some of you have been working with your own children, your own grandchildren, and you're nodding your head going, yes, I have seen this their first language. And that is exciting too. Okay, so often I go into schools, and you can see a ton of this stuff when you walk into a school. And all I'm trying to do is get from my car to the office to sign in the paper. But just getting from my car to the sign in the office, you see this stuff in the hall all the time. So I'm walking in school, and kind of an older kid, maybe fifth grade or something, with a younger kid, maybe fourth or third, you know, and he's got him in a headlock. And I always love the boys because they're just amazing to me. So he's got them in a headlock and he's giving noogies, you know, just like this. And here they are just walking down the hall, giving noogies. Teachers are going and coming, they're just giving noogies. And so you go to the victim first. Say that with me.
Go to the victim first.
So I go to the guy down here, you know, and I'm going, and I notice, you know, I go, he's got you in a headlock giving you noogies. Just in case he wasn't familiar with what was going on. So I noticed that down there, and I said, and I didn't say, did you like it? Because they were a little bit older. I said, is that all right with you? Boy down here goes, it's not that bad. And so I'm leaving alone. No harm, no foul. I mean, that's kind of their way of playing, so to speak. So I turned to the guy down here. I said, well, if it gets to be uncomfortable, you can say, stop, it's not fun anymore, let go. I take about 3 steps. What do you think he says?
Stop.
Stop. It's not fun anymore. I empowered him with the language to use to get out of the situation, because boys use some kind of strange, funky ways of playing, you know? And as a female, we tend to want to say, you know, that's hurtful, that's not safe. And, you know, most of the time they're like, oh, it's all right, I just lost one tooth. You know, I mean, so we have to give some leeway for that. So I walk a little further. These are little guys now. Got on a backpack, and it's got the strap, you know, that goes up here, the little thin strap, and the big one down here. So I go a little further, and a guy's riding on the back of the backpack. You know, just kind of like dragging his feet like this. Well, that pack's up to here, so it's like hanging the little one in front. You know, look, you can just see it kind of turning red. And they're both walking down the, you know. So I go to the one that's choked, right?
I said, get way down low. You know, he's riding on the back of your backpack and the strap's up around your neck and your face is turning red. Is that okay with you? Do you like it? And again, I love these guys. It's not that bad. I said, well, if it gets so you can't breathe, say, hop off, I can't breathe. Few steps, you know what he says? Hop off, I can't breathe. So I give you, did you like it? Go tell them I don't like it. But I also know that once you get the hang of what you're doing, it flows from your body. Once you know that my job is to teach, my job is to teach, and you change that intent, you change how you see it, I'm telling you, it will flow out of your mouth. But until then, it's a hard habit to change. So I like to give you kind of little sentences to get you started until it becomes part of who you are. All right, so the structure for this is the time machine. And most of the structures that we use in the classroom are there to help the teacher and to help the child. These are the steps that you go through. And instead of us walking through, I thought I'd give a couple first graders an opportunity to share how this works. So watch these first graders in this video show you about the time machine. What is this called right here?
Time machine.
And Josh, what's it for? Why would you get this?
Because they have a disagreement and they didn't use their words and they want to use it. We set it up. Are you willing?
Mm-hmm. Are you willing?
Yes.
Okay, take your first step. Okay, so now what do you do on that step?
Breathe.
You take a deep breath. What does STAR stand for?
Stop, take a deep breath, and relax.
Okay, and then you take the next step. Okay, so what is...
We do like we did earlier, so we just...
You wish well. Why do you think you wishing people well so you can solve a problem? Why do you think that? Do you think it helps at all?
Yeah, it helps sort of because it makes them pretty much feel better because they want other people to help them.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. Okay, and then you take the next step. So, Talise, what is that one?
1, 2, 3, let's do it. Okay. So we take another step. And
I don't like it when you push me. Please.
And what would you like her to do instead?
Watch where you're going.
Yeah. So do you read it or do you actually look at the person when you do this?
Look at the person.
Yeah, you think looking helps? Yeah. And then what do you say?
Okay, I can do that.
And then this heart, what does that heart thing in the middle mean?
Oh, I see what that heart means. You just kind of...
Now, when you hug each other at the end, what do you think that means?
It means we can become a family again.
You're back being a family again. That makes sense to me. Have you ever... Do y'all like the time machine?
Mm-hmm.
How come?
Because we like solving problems and figuring out what's going on and, like, hoping people understand and solve the problem that we're in.
Yeah, that feels better, don't you think, than going around being mad at each other?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unrehearsed, out of the mouth of first graders. And it's interesting because once they practice on the time machine, first of all, it gives the teacher or the parent the skills to help the siblings. It helps learn the language that you need in here. But it's so fun when the kids learn how to do this. Then you'll see them on the playground. If there's not one out there, you'll see them going, 1, 2, 3, let's do it. And they'll go through these whole steps. I mean, there's nothing on the ground. They just learn those steps. But here's what gets me. Can you imagine how our marriages might be just a teeny bit different if we did this and say, who, you willing? Okay. And you go through this, you change your state. You start here, you're very upset with each other. You breathe, you take another step, you calm yourself, you wish them well, you say, we're on the same team. 1, 2, 3, let's do it. We can work together, we can solve this. And you actually tell each other what you want them to do so that it's more comfortable for you to be in this relationship, and they agree to do it, I mean, I don't know about you, but, you know, I'm in with that. You know, of course, I'm not so good with it yet, but no, I'm getting better and better. And one of the things that we call in my family, in terms with the grandchild, is a do-over. The time machine's a do-over. And we've had, Maddie's four and I have got into some interesting little battles, and either I or her will go, she calls me BB, and she'll go, BB, can we do a do-over? I said, you betcha. Or I'll go, Maddie, let's do a do-over. And that when we get in the time machine, roll back and do the scene over again, and we do it in a helpful way instead of a hurtful way. The other structure we use is visuals. Remember, we're making images of what to do. Images of what to do. This is a home schedule. Kids have such complicated schedules this time. Okay, on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, you're going to go here. Before school, you go here. After school, you go here. Every other weekend, you go with your dad. And then your aunt will pick you up on Thursday. But then the van will take you to karate on Tuesday. I mean, I don't know who could keep track of this. If we didn't have it, a planner, we'd lose it too. So we need to put it in pictures so they know what to predict, what's our schedule, when do I do this. And this particular one, this child was a fanatic about dance and wanted to wear her tutu all every week, every day. So the whole morning, every morning from Monday to Friday was a fight because she wanted to put her tutu on. And so it was like, well, what if you showed her what day the tutu was needed? And they go, well, that's a novel idea. Once she saw when she could wear the tutu, the other days were like, oh, I don't need my tutu now. So all our routines, and we want to put them in pictures. Why are we putting them in pictures? Because the right hemisphere is the self-regulation hemisphere. You can talk to your blue in the face. How many have said, it's in one ear and out the other? Exactly. Make a picture, and it's like it's stuck in there. And I love this one because they're learning how to just go to the bathroom. And not only that, they're practicing. They got a box with a blow-up toilet, and we're going to practice this whole thing. Before you go in that stall, I want you to show me you can do it, because Lord knows what's happening without me. If you go in there and you have children that you complain about their room, this isn't clean. You call this clean? Well, why don't you put a picture of what you consider clean is? And then you say, does your room look like the picture? If it does, see you later. If not, fix it. Why not give them the image? Why not give them the image? So I want you to think now about your school. I want to think about your home. How many images do you have in your school, in your classroom, at your home that tells children what to do? And if you don't have many, it's time. So here's a whole arrival book, and then you can make them into book. This is how do you arrive at school and what you do. This one I love because this is a book children made in upper grades in second and third or fourth grade, and it's the book for the substitute. And it's in pictures to show the substitute what to do. The kids made it. Your job is to help the substitute be successful. Make him or her a book. Share the book. Make it in pictures. And let it be. And this is Where Is Grace This Week? And this is another one of those that's showing, here's where you're going this week. Because she had one of those freaky schedules at home that was freaky. You know, she was doing everything different on a day, and she couldn't keep track of where she was going. This is a child's bedtime routine, all in pictures, a book that is read over and over and over again, making images in your brain of how this child goes to bed, how you get to your grocery store. Those images are critical. We have now talked about two critical skills that we start to build safety with. Composure. You must calm yourself enough to focus on what you want the child to do. What you focus on, you get
more.
And when you're upset, you're always focused on what you don't want. always. So unless we start with composure, we can't focus children on what we want them to do. And without focusing on what we want them to do, we can't organize their brain around the values we hold dear. So, with that, it's time for our commitment. So think one more time of an animal that seems like it wants to represent you right now. Maybe that animal picked you this time. And I want you to listen to the commitment. Hold the animal in your hand. Listen to the commitment. Here it is. I am willing to spend 1 week of my life discovering where I focus my attention. I am going to be conscious of my outer and inner speech. I am willing to vigilantly focus on what I want to happen in my life, what I want others to do, and notice the changes in my life. If you're willing for all that, that's a big one, toss it in. You got it. And once again, I will catch this. I will catch this and place this in for me, for you, for everyone listening, and know that this indeed will make huge changes in our lives. So until next time, I wish you well.